court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
Well, I can't remember if we finished off our last episode saying we're going to be in some new digs for our next episode, but we are.
We did say that.
Did we?
Yeah, you had me put me under the pressure because I still had to get my basement cleaned out, but we got it done. Got the studio set up.
It's a lot more spacious down here, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, very spacious. A lot different atmosphere. We don't have to interfere with anybody's comings and goings or anything. We just slip down here and have at it.
So this is Smurl Studios.
It's up on top of Three Last Mountain.
Three Last Mountain?
That's right. That's what we like to call it. Smurl Studios on Three Last Mountain. Come to you. 1,021 megawatts.
I really like the decor down here. We got some little brick wall and some curtains and some tables and microphones. And
well, you know, all in all, we're just another brick in the wall.
Well, this episode, we thought we would touch on something we kind of talked about a little bit in an episode when we had Travis on. It was episode 74, which was Bunkering Down with Travis. We had Travis McElroy on. And it was sovereign citizens.
That's right. A sovereign citizen. And we had some people write in and want to know, you know, exactly what is a sovereign citizen. You touched on it, and maybe I missed it. Well, no, you didn't miss it. We didn't really go into it. We just said that a lot of the people, a lot is probably an exaggeration. There are several people involved in the prepping community that are also consider themselves sovereign citizens.
That's right. I think I don't necessarily go hand in hand, but there's probably a slightly higher than normal contingent of sovereign citizens in the prepper community than there is in just your average U.S. citizen viewery.
Well, I guess what you're saying is there are people that tend to think certain ways or certain things that fall into the categories of how they think. And so this is more common amongst people that think of it's either more common amongst people that think of prepping or more common amongst people that think of themselves as a sovereign citizen, because as a sovereign citizen, you are basically isolating yourself from the United States.
Right. And also the prepper community in and of itself, I think, has a lot of people who, not a lot, but a number of people, a disproportionate number again, that may be into conspiracy theories and end of world type things because, and that's part of the whole thing, they're prepping to make sure, not necessarily end of the world type things, but also, you know, it can be hurricane preparedness, things like that. But like the ones that are making actual bunkers and they're preparing for end of times and conspiracies.
And they're ones, you know, most people, their first thought is, oh, if any disaster happens, I'm going to rely on my government to protect me and tell me what to do. These people are saying, no, I'm not relying on them. I'm taking care of this myself. They don't know what they're doing. They're not going to take care of me. I'm going to take care of me.
And the whole sovereign citizen belief system actually derives from conspiracy theory to a certain degree. So I think that's probably why those two things are linked a little bit to a certain amount.
And it's not true. Not all of them wear tinfoil hats.
No, only 30% of them, I believe, was the estimate I read.
That's right. Now, you can test that fact.
The general belief is that the American government, which was set up by our founding fathers, was actually secretly replaced by a new government that was based on admiralty law. That's the law of the sea and international commerce. And that under this system, that U.S. citizens are actually slaves, and the government forces are trying to keep them that way. And they say that this is actually backed up by the fact that a lot of flags and courts and different places have fringe on them, which are admiralty flags. That's one of the things they talk about.
And there's key words that they use, too, that they found that they say indicate this.
There are, yeah. And now when we're talking about their belief system, things like that, there's not really any kind of centralized, I guess you might say, belief structure for them, but there are some things that tend to pop up over and over again. That's kind of what we're going to be hitting on, is like the general belief structure they have, not necessarily maybe some of the fringe are
the fringe element of the fringe on the flag.
The fringe of the fringe. So
the lunatic fringe. Well, now, and this is not, it's not a great big number, but it's still significant enough that it kind of made me think that there's like, they have figures that show there's about 200 to 300,000 people that consider themselves sovereign citizens. And it's not just confined to the United States. They also say the sovereign citizen movement is also in Canada and Australia, although they tend to call themselves freemen.
Freemen of the land?
Yes, freemen of the land.
The numbers and the way they estimate this is that they look at the number of filings under the IRS, which where people have basically asserted these same kind of sovereign citizen type arguments to defy paying taxes, because that's one of their things they say is that you can't make us pay taxes. We're sovereign citizens.
Yeah, we don't belong to the United States. We don't recognize the federal government. The highest person they recognize is the county sheriff. Because they do say that they're a member of the state. They're right. Just not a member of the federal government because they say they were not made citizens by the 14th Amendment.
Now, the common theory is that this whole admiralty type setup took place either during the Civil War or in 1933 when the U.S. abandoned the gold standard. Those are the two kind of main theories about when this whole sovereign citizen thing took place. And now the Civil War is probably pretty obvious because they're, you know, talking about the war between the states and with regards to slavery. It's obvious where that kind of links together. But with the gold standard, it's kind of a completely different argument. I think this is probably the more popular of the sovereign citizen arguments. So in 1933, you had the Great Depression, and essentially countries were having to abandon the gold standard because that basically meant that the dollars were not backed up dollar for dollar with the amount of gold that they had on hand. So basically people started hoarding gold because they didn't trust any financial institution because it wasn't backed by the gold standard. The Federal Reserve kept raising interest rates because it was trying to make dollars more valuable and dissuade people from using the U.S. gold reserves. And the higher rates worsened depression by making everything more expensive. So in 1933, President Roosevelt closed the banks, and he responded to the run on gold at the Federal Reserve by basically saying that people could no longer redeem their dollars for gold. So, and also no one could export gold. So basically stopping the whole run on gold to try to stop the depression. In addition, FDR ordered Americans to turn in their gold in exchange for dollars. And he did this basically to prohibit any kind of hoarding of the gold. And this created the gold reserves at Fort Knox, which is actually the world's largest supply of gold. And that's what it was at that time.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard the terminology a silver certificate or a gold certificate?
Yeah, I've seen them. Actually, if you have some older currency. Dollars, yeah, it says that. Silver certificate.
And supposedly what those were is they were worth the silver or the gold on demand. You could go in with the silver or gold certificate and demand that amount of gold, whatever the denomination of the bill was. Now, you don't see those anymore, but I remember when I was a kid coming across those from time to time.
Well, essentially what happened was the dollar used to say, it's backed by the gold, the amount of gold we have in reserves. And now the U.S. dollar is, because we're on a modified gold standard, is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. This means that the government, backs it up itself. It doesn't necessarily have gold that it represents that it backs it up with, but the government itself is backing it up. Now, this plays into their conspiracy theory pretty strongly because basically they say that the government, instead of gold, has essentially pledged citizens as collateral, and it's selling their future earnings as capacity to foreign investors.
We are their collateral. They sold us to the Chinese.
Exactly. And that's where they get the whole thing that actually you, as a sovereign citizen, that you're actually a slave to your government. So, I mean, these theories are kind of interesting, and they touch a little bit on history, and they touch a little bit on some actual historical reference, but they're just kind of...
And they didn't come about, even though they're talking about things in the Civil War and the gold standards and all that kind of stuff, that's not when these things actually came about. These are points they're referring to in history as to what happened that gave it back, because the movement actually came about in the 1970s.
Right.
And grew out of an extremist group called the Posse Comitatus. And that's a common law legal term meaning the force of the county. And they coalesced around a white right wing. That's hard to say. Right wing anti-government ideas in Oregon, although it had a presence in California and Wisconsin as well. The group's members maintain that the county level of government is the highest authority, and that people can declare themselves sovereign and free of federal government control, and that income taxes are illegitimate. Now, they also have had spread anti-government tactics, and they were adherents of racist and anti-Semitic hate group. And so, you know, they grew out of this thing. You know, it was kind of one of those things where they said there was certain classes of people that were controlling all the money.
Right.
And so they were revolting against that. But it actually grew out of a white supremacist group.
Yeah, which is not kind of surprising.
True.
given some of the arguments they make. So basically, their whole argument, and this is pretty much, like, again, this is one of the common theories that they have, or common ideas, is that whenever a child is born, they're required to obtain a Social Security number. And that essentially the Social Security number sets up a corporate trust in that baby's name, and it funds an account. And it splits, essentially, at this point, every newborn's rights between those held by the actual flesh and blood human versus those held by the corporate shell. And there's a belief that this account has money in it. And it ranges in difference depending on whose ideology you're following. But the majority, I think, is about $630,000 is set up in this account, is kind of what the common belief is. And basically, their whole argument for this is that, and what it signifies it, is that the person's name on the birth certificate is in all caps, and that whenever you see something on an official document in all caps, that signifies that the straw man or the corporate shell and not the actual flesh and blood person is being referenced. And so when you get documents in all caps, that doesn't mean it pertains to the flesh and blood person. Like an arrest warrant in all caps? Nope, not me. Cable bill? Nope, not me. So that's their whole rationale.
Yeah, I've read that where, depending on if words are capitalized or not, they have different meanings.
A lot of times what they'll do too is they'll try to avoid subjugation to the false government, and they'll do this by signing their name in certain ways too. I don't know if you came across any of this. They'll identify themselves as John Doe, executive trustee for the private contract trust known as John Doe. John Doe being in all caps.
Right.
So, but, you know, essentially they're saying that they're this representative of the corporate self, or by identifying themselves as an executor for the straw man, or using the copyright symbol with their name, or saying authorized representative, attorney in fact, on behalf of so and so. Or using colons or hyphens or other weird punctuation, sometimes adding the prefix noble or the suffix bay or el bay with their name.
Bay, so that's what that means. I don't know who your bay was.
Bay caught me sleeping.
Yeah.
So they also sometimes...
How about boo? Do they use boo?
El boo.
Hey boo.
They'll put their zip code in brackets, or instead of putting their actual address, they'll put near like their actual address. So, you know, very, very tricky stuff.
Yeah, that sounds pretty technical. Instead of boo, it'd be more like boo-boo. Hey, boo, let's get some picnic baskets.
Now, their view about the straw man, the treasury account, also explains part of their fascination with the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. And they believe, in portion, that filing a UCC financing statement, that they can establish their superior right to their treasury account and actually get that money that's in that treasury account that the government's allocated for them, and that they can create a superior debtor or creditor right on that. So basically, they're taking things from the UCC and trying to twist it and turn it to fit their beliefs. So,
well, there's it's pretty elaborate, the things that they go into on this stuff, to really be like a fringe group. When I say fringe group, well, they're actually considered by the federal government as domestic terrorists. They're a terrorist organization.
Well, they don't believe in the rule of our government.
Right. And they have caused, they are more of a threat than Islamic terrorism at this time in the United States.
Yeah, I understand that completely. I mean, it makes perfect sense if you think about it. Actually, and this is kind of funny or scary. I had someone come into my office one time. You know, they wanted to have a consult with me about some sort of, they need a lawyer for something. I think I really wasn't sure what. They had some sort of contract or legal thing they wanted me to look at. And they came in my office and they said that they wanted to file a UCC financing statement so they could free themselves.
Free, you say free yourself from what?
Well, I had never heard of this before. And they looked at me and kind of like with a wink and a nod, like, oh, yeah, like, you know what I'm talking about. You know what needs to be done.
You know, like I'm a sovereign citizen, dude.
Yeah, like I had some sort of secret knowledge about this stuff, like, how to file a financing statement. I just was like, what are you talking about?
you didn't have like your Confederate flag on the wall or something, and that's why they figured you were in on it or something?
No. Well, my memory's gotten a little bit fuzzy, but I think this is the same consult where they came in where they wanted to sue Islam.
Sue Islam.
Yeah.
That's a pretty broad suit.
I just looked at him and said, okay, well, who am I going to serve? And they're like, well, I don't know.
Muhammad.
It's like, you'll get a lot of good press for this. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure I'll get some press.
You get some press. Not the kind you wants to get.
Yeah.
Well, if it please the court. Well, if it please the court, I'd like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket today, Tommy?
Well, today on the docket, first up, we have our good friends at DollarShaveClub.com. You've heard us talk about the amazing shave that we get from our Dollar Shave Club razors. Well, especially when we use the Dr. Carver Shave Butter. And I'm here to tell you that I am never giving up my membership. In fact, I'm adding even more Dollar Shave Club products to my daily routine.
Even though I have a luscious beard going at this point, I still...
It is luscious, Mike. Let me just tell you how luscious
you, Tommy.
It is.
I still need to trim it up and keep it cleaned up. And I love using Dollar Shave Club razors for this. Part of the reason, around your neck, when you're trimming that up, you put the Dr. Carver Shave Butter on there. It pulls those hairs right off. I guess pull is probably not even the right word. They just magically disappear. The other thing, too, is these razors, they have a little razor on top, like a single, where you can do some trimming to get like a little bit of a clean it up in tighter spaces. So when you're coming up like around your cheeks and things like that, you can clean it up real neatly. So,
well, I know that Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. And for as good as you can, they've got me looking and feeling amazing. I mean, at my age, you can only get so good, but Dollar Shave Club's working as hard as it can.
And the thing is, it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it to you, just like they do their razors.
That means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf of what the hell is that and what do I do with it?
We use Dollar Shave Club for just about everything. They've got us covered from head to toe. And with gift memberships and e-gift cards available, Dollar Shave Club can help cover the names on your holiday shopping list, too.
Now, we want you to love your Dollar Shave Club as much as we do. So, we've arranged for you to try your first month of their best razor, along with travel-size versions of Shave Buddy, of Shave Butter, Body Cleanser, and yes, even Butt Wipes, for just $5.
After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set.
Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/court.
Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
Who do we have up next, Tommy?
Next up, Mike, is our good friends at Sleep Number.
Well, making New Year's resolutions is one thing. Sticking to them is something different altogether.
You're right about that.
Whether it's resolving to get to the gym more or eating sweets less, there's one thing that can help. Make sure you sleep well.
Most Americans get less than the recommended 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. If that's you, science proves getting more sleep will make it easier to hold fast to your goals.
Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort and support on each side. It's the perfect bed for couples.
Their newest beds are so smart, they actually sense your every move and automatically adjust, so you stay sleeping comfortably throughout the night. You know, I could really use that, Mike. With my knee situation, I wake up a lot. So sleeping through the night, as long as I don't have to get up and pee 2 or 3 times, I mean, that would be a value to me.
They even have an adjustment for snoring. Does your bed do that, Tommy?
No, it doesn't. But you know what does.
Your CPAP machine.
There you go. Everybody knows by now.
We always talk about Tommy's CPAP machine.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, right now, don't miss the best bed for couples at the lowest prices of the season. Come in now and save $400 to $700 on the most popular Sleep Number mattresses.
And we won't supply who the couples are with you. But that's up to you.
You're on your own there.
You're on there. The Sleep Number doesn't do that for you. The mattress isn't that good.
They'll give you the bed, but finding the partners,
that's your job. That's up to you.
And let them pick their own number, too, while you're at it.
I know what number I'd pick. That's my sleep number. You'll only find Sleep Number at sleepnumber.com/court or any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide.
Well, now, as I said, the beliefs and practices can vary considerably from the group to group and the person to person. But once you're kind of familiar with the different ideas, you're more likely to realize when you're dealing with a sovereign citizen. And Tommy started talking about this earlier, about some different terms and things you see a lot. One of the things I said, like, you know, when they introduce themselves, they might say, like, I'm an agent of so-and-so, or talk about the corporate identity and things like that. They talk, obviously, about common law and admiralty law a lot, and the oaths of office. And they like to carry around a Black's Law Dictionary. If you don't know what a Black's Law Dictionary is, it's kind of a law dictionary.
I could gather that from the title.
It's one that...
Even I could figure that out.
It's one that usually, as a law student, at least I did, and this is advice I was given. I don't know if all law students do it, but they probably should, is buy a Black's Law Dictionary when you go to first year of law school and keep it with you, because that way, whenever something pops up you don't know what it is, look it up.
Well, that's because these guys' beliefs, these are not just cursory beliefs. These are very intricate, detailed things, and they have all this way that you're supposed to say things and everything else. It's not easy. I mean, I've listened to some of these arguments that these people pose as to why they're sovereign citizens and everything, and some of them, they've got some videotapes. If you go to YouTube, you can find some of these sovereign citizens not complying with traffic stops and things like that and feeling like they have the right to. But the thing that I find in common is they're all like jailhouse lawyers.
Yeah.
They all think they know the law, and they start saying these certain words in certain ways. So I would assume you'd probably have to have a dictionary. There was one there, and he was trying to sound real sophisticated, and he was talking about it, and he goes, and speeding in and of itself is not a crime as of the, not the attorney general, who's the other guy? And he's talking to the cop. It's like, you know, you were on a roll there, buddy, but you lost it there when you couldn't think of the district attorney.
You're doing so well. Right up there till the very end.
And and then he's asking the cop for help. Who's that other guy?
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
You know who I mean, right?
Well, one of the things they always think about themselves is that they have to have certain words or say certain things that'll actually protect them. Like it's, you know, some sort of loophole. Some of the terms you'll hear a lot is referring to the government as a corporation. They'll ask for, like, affidavit of truth, judicial district of tens, a Title IV flag, a UCC-1 statement, silence is acquiescence, requesting an official's bond, using the word fiduciary, the term letters of marque, sovereign living soul, or state citizen. Those are all different terms that you'll hear.
And there's a lot of them that feel they can gain this status by... They basically denounce their U.S. citizenship. They divest themselves of their Social Security card, driver's license, anything that ties them to the government. Birth certificates, they do away with those things. They make a proclamation to each other that they are no longer U.S. citizens, like you can just do it that way.
Yeah.
And there's an amendment. I can't remember which one it was, but there's an amendment where you can actually be in a foreign country and denounce yourself in front of a certain type of official, and you can do that. But you got to be in another country.
Yeah.
You can't do it here in the U.S., and you got to have one of these officials from this other country that you do it, that you can denounce your U.S. citizenship. But you can't do it while you're here, dude. You got to leave.
And they also, they'll create their own birth certificates and passports and driver's license and vehicle registrations, all those different things. And they have, like, again, different belief structures that say, like, why they're able to do this. They'll say that basically... They're occupying United Nations Indigenous People seat number 215. You know, it's like, what? And the thing is, a lot of times when you see, like, videos or hear people talk about this, they'll say it with such conviction that you'll have to do a double take. Like, maybe this guy knows what he's talking about. Because it's just enough. It's just enough to make you think, like, really?
The ones that are good at it, they got it down pat. They got all this stuff down pat. And here's one of the things that I read, too, about it, is it said... Well, they didn't get into an exact percentage, whether it's 50-50 or not, but, you know, like whatever the percentage is, certain number of them, they're in it as a scam or to get away with something. The other part, there is another part, though, that is actually a fanatical faction of such as cult followers. They believe this. I mean, they're not doing this. This isn't an act. This isn't something they're trying to get away with something or anything. They actually believe this to be a fact, and they are acting within their rights. You know, just the same as, you know, David Koresh and his followers in Waco and stuff like that. Same type thing. They believe that, right or wrong, this is their beliefs.
Yeah. I mean, they are definitely into it.
And those are the ones that can be scary because they do actually believe. The ones that are trying to get away with something, they're going to reach a certain point. You know, like I saw these ones avoiding these traffic stops, and they're like, are you detaining me? Am I under arrest? Am I free to go? And they keep doing that right up until the officer busts their window out and drags their ass out of the car. Then suddenly it's like, okay, here's my driver's license. Here's my proof of insurance.
Well, see, the thing is, too, is they're taking something that is actually a legitimate thing to ask an officer that, and they're just taking it to a stupid extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can say, am I being detained? And let the officer know, because that means that if the officer's not detaining you, you're free to leave.
Right.
So, and basically, that would end the interrogation at that point. They're taking things that actually are legal things, but just distorting them and making them stupid.
There's also some definition that I never quite got to, that traveling is a key word. If you're traveling, they cannot stop you. You have the right to travel. But that's the term you have to use. You can't use you're on a journey or you're on a trip or where you're going. You're traveling.
Yeah, again, it's those special words that you have to use. And they have like all these different things they like to file too. And there's a court case I came across too. I'll talk about in a minute. But the thing is, they think that basically, even though the government's not legitimate, that if they file certain things and all these different things, that it actually has all this legal effect, which is, it's strange, because if you don't recognize the government, then why are you filing all this stuff? Again, they'll file a notice of copyright as to their name. They will, when talking about filings responding to traffic tickets or other charges, they'll label documents as abandoned paperwork and demanding the court official respond with authentication of authority or a certified copy of the official's oath, a certified copy of the bar bond, and so on. They'll ask for an affidavit of specific negative averment, opportunity to cure, counterclaim. Like, just basically take things that are just legal vomitus and just throw it onto a piece of paper and file it. They there's all kinds of different things. Notice of silver surety bond. Like, you know, what is that all about? Then the thing is, you can't even, oh, here's one, legal notice, right to travel, like you had said.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they file these things that, I mean, they're kind of like legal things you would file. Like, there's a time when you'd file.
They sound legal.
You might file a notice of surety bond in a certain situation, but I'm certain you wouldn't file a notice of silver surety bond. I mean, what does that even mean? You have to have silver to file a bond? I mean, it's just...
Or somebody has to give you silver if they violate it or something?
Yeah, so...
One of the other things, you know, we talked about a few episodes ago, mechanics liens.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of their tools that they fight back against the government, is they will go and place liens on the property of judges, county officials, federal officials, anybody they want. They'll just go in and file liens on their property for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if the county clerk or whoever accepts the lien filing, it's there. And it can cost these officials thousands of dollars or big delays in selling property or whatever because of these liens being against it. And there's several of them that will just go around and file these liens against us. That's one of the things that they do to battle the government, is filing false liens.
Yeah, and when you file something like that, that is basically a false lien like that, that's actually a criminal thing. So if they get caught doing that, then they would face criminal prosecution for it.
But they've always got some kind of argument as to why it was legitimate. It's not, but by their notion in their head, this is why it's legitimate.
Right. But essentially, it would cost somebody a huge headache, and there's not really much you can do about it. You can't sue them civilly because most likely they don't have any money to take from them. Because a lot of times when somebody files a lien against your property or something like that, if you get it removed because it was a wrong filing, you get your attorney's fees and costs back against that
person. You're not going to get anything from one of these people, though.
No, probably not.
Well, but what really gets me, and when you think about it, it has nothing to do with them, people shouldn't be able to go, they should have to have some kind of proof of whatever they're filing. They shouldn't be able to walk in and file a lien without some kind of proof or something. That bothers me that the system's set up where that's that easy.
Well, they do. They have to file a notice of silver surety bond in order to file that.
Yeah, right.
But no, I mean, for the most part, though, we want to streamline these processes to make it not so cumbersome, so somebody, when they have to file a lien, they can go in and do it. And basically, it's based on some sort of affidavit that they have the right to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole society is based on the fact that most people won't lie or won't do this. So,
well, the times, they are a-changing, to quote a great poet.
Now, there's one case I came across that I thought was really kind of interesting, and it came from Federal District Court in the Northern District of Illinois from Judge Richard A. Posner.
Yeah.
You've heard of Posner before, probably, haven't you?
I've heard of Wampner.
Wampner?
Yeah.
I'm gonna not try to read the whole opinion, but it's pretty funny. But I'll kind of surmise it. And it came out in February of 2015. Defendant Hakeem L. Bey, there's that L. Bey that I mentioned.
Yeah, there's old Bey.
Has been indicted by the federal government for defrauding and attempting to defraud the IRS in violation of Title 18. The defendant has chosen to represent himself, as he's entitled to do, and I have appointed counsel to help the defendant while preparing his case. And it says, I have been concerned by a series of affidavits that the defendant has filed over the course of the pretrial proceedings and statements that he has made at our pre-conference hearings. As I have reminded him repeatedly, most recently in an order of February 12th, he must not at trial attempt to introduce evidence, testimony, or argument regarding the UCC, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Admiralty and Maritime Law, or the Foreign Service Immunities Act. These bodies of law are totally irrelevant to this criminal prosecution, nor may he argue at trial that this court lacks jurisdiction over him because he is a sovereign citizen or a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. He's in fact a U.S. citizen. That the U.S. government is a corporation or is insolvent, or that the IRS has been dismantled. These are all utterly irrelevant and frivolous contentions. So this judge is actually writing this. He says, but I seem unable to convince him, and I am losing confidence that he will obey my order. Since I issued it, he has submitted two additional affidavits. The first, dated the day before the issuance of the order I just mentioned, asked the government to pay him $367,500 in redemption of damages he has suffered as a result of property theft and kidnapping, by whom not specified, though he seems to be accusing the government. He also asserts lack of jurisdiction over the person, contracted artificial subject versus natural born, whatever that means. He also asserts that the Queen of England entered into a treaty with the federal government for the taxing of alcoholic beverages and cigarettes sold in America. The treaty is called the Stamp Act. And in this act, the Queen ordained that her subject, the American people, are exonerated of all other federal taxes. So the federal income tax and the state income taxes levied against all Americans is contrary to an international treaty and against the sovereign orders of the Queen.
Well, I say long live the Queen, then.
The Stamp Act was entered. This is the judge continuing with his opinion. The Stamp Act was enacted by the Parliament of Great Britain in 1765. It did not relieve Americans of any taxes. On the contrary, it imposed a comprehensive tax on the use of paper by Americans. The act was not a treaty between Britain and the federal government of the United States, for there was no United States at that time. There were just 13 British colonies that 11 years later declared independence from Great Britain. There was no federal taxes on the act that could have been relieved from Americans having to pay. The sovereign of Britain at the time was a king, not a queen. The king's wife, Princess Charlotte of Mecklenburg Strelitz, was Great Britain's queen, but had no governmental authority. So the judge is actually taking the time to kind of debunk all this.
Well, here's what worries me about all that. Now, either this judge was kind of playing along with him and trying to beat him at his own game, and so he went to all this effort of the historical data and everything else to get all this up, or he was really worried that maybe this guy was onto something, and so he figured he better try to shut him down.
Well, I'll give you my reasoning as to why this judge did this, or more likely the other scenario, here in a minute. Let me finish this up, though. In the defendant's second recent filing, signed several days after this court's February 12th order, the defendant once again asks the court to dismiss the case for want of jurisdiction, invokes the UCC, the Sovereign Immunities Act, and claims the proper court to hear this case is the Court of International Trade. This filing borders on incoherence, as where it states, this case reference to 28 U.S.C. 2461, since all tax revenue cases are done within the Admiralty Court. Court of International Trade is the proper jurisdiction. The Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act, this provision has application since the foreign sovereign judge, clerk, attorney, agents are liable for damages while doing business in the U.S. That was the filing, whatever that means. If, as is increasingly becoming apparent, the defendant refuses to refrain from injecting utterly irrelevant, patently inaccurate, and sometimes unintelligible contentions into this case, I will not be able to allow him to represent himself at the trial. I do not believe that he is mentally deficient. Indeed, he strikes me as an intelligent person, and he has been unfailingly polite at our pretrial conferences. I want him to have a fair trial. He cannot have a fair trial if, as I fear, his defense will be based solely on the affidavits of truth that culminate with the two latest affidavits summarized above. So
now this guy, he may really have believed all this. I mean, yeah. He may have been brought up in a house where he was taught this, and this is his gospel as far as he knows.
So that's pretty much the gist of that whole thing. And now here's the reason why I think that was such a well thought out, well reasoned opinion. There is a lot of stuff that comes across the court that is just boring, run of the mill, same old stuff that's really not that interesting.
So this was something we got to have fun with, huh?
It was. And let me tell you something else. I would doubt that judge actually wrote that opinion. That opinion was most likely written by a law clerk. As a former law clerk myself, I know when sometimes something came across the judge's desk and the judge asked me to write an opinion about it, I took it with gusto. I love to write orders.
So depending on his relationship with the judge, he might have been like, how far can I go with this?
Yeah.
As long as you stay within the realms of the case, have at it.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think probably a law clerk wrote this and probably had a lot of fun with it. You see that a lot of times. There's been some opinions I've read that talk about like whenever they get into like street jargon or street slang about things, they'll mm-hmm. they'll go into a lot of explanation as to what a certain term might mean. Like,
right. You know,
that's almost certainly a law clerk just being really bored with their job and trying to have some fun. So,
well, you know, a lot of people say, well, why would somebody want to become a sovereign citizen? Well, the five or most common fraud crimes of sovereign citizens, and I mean, there's a lot of them. They're trying to get out of doing something.
Right.
They are income tax evasion because they don't recognize the federal government. So why would you pay federal taxes to a government you don't recognize?
Makes sense.
So they don't pay them and they try to get out of it. Now, if they got caught not paying taxes and decided they were a sovereign citizen, you might suspect their beliefs are not really rock solid. But if they have been this way all their life and never paid taxes because they thought that, you know, it doesn't change the circumstances, but at least, you know, the guy's not just trying to scam you, you know. Now, then there's also the redemption scheme, mm-hmm. which you've talked about, and proponents of this scheme claim that U.S. government controls bank accounts and often refer to a U.S. Treasury direct accounts for all U.S. citizens, and sovereign citizens claim these accounts can be accessed by submitting certain types of paperwork to state and federal authorities.
Right, like I was talking about that UCC-1 right. financing statement, those types of things.
Yeah, so they'll clog up the courts doing things like that.
You know what is strange? These UCC-1 financing statements, what they're actually for is that if you have a security interest in some sort of property, like mm-hmm. if you go out and you're going to essentially start a restaurant, mm-hmm. and you come to Bank of Mike and say, hey, Bank of Mike, can I get a loan because I want to start a restaurant? And I say, sure, you know, here's $100,000 to buy all the equipment you need for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can file UCC-1 financing statements that say I have a security interest in the commercial refrigerator, the commercial grill.
Enough to get
things.
My money back.
Yeah. So basically you put everyone on notice that you have superior lien on that.
Right.
Now, if they want to try to get a lien or a loan against that again, they can certainly do it. They can go to Bank of Tom.
Number two.
You're number two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incumbent upon Bank of Tom to look at these different financing statements and see if anybody has a perfected security interest in these things before they loan money. And if they're being diligent, they will. If they're not, they'll be like, sure, give them money. And then, you know, depending on how much they lend them, they might not get their money back if things go belly up, as sometimes happens with restaurants.
Well, you know what I say? At Bank of Tom, we're number two, so we try harder.
At Bank of Tom, we know who number two works for.
At Bank of Tom, we don't put up with no number two.
At Bank of Tom, we do our repossessions ourselves.
That's right, and we enjoy it. Now, the third most common crime they commit, fraud they commit, is selling fraudulent documents.
Mm.
As you can imagine, there's big business in selling people free men, sovereign citizen birth certificates and driver's licenses and open carry permits and things like that, because they don't recognize the federal government. They have to get their documents somewhere. So come to our website and buy your fake documents here. But we just don't tell you they're fake.
Right.
So they make a lot of money selling things that way, too. There's ones that set up that way.
I almost think that's like kind of preying on the mentally ill to a certain degree.
Well, dude, you know, I don't think they're considered mentally ill. This is their ill-guided beliefs.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's taken advantage of, that's for sure.
All right. Then.
Meanwhile, I'm thinking about maybe I should open up one of these websites.
Yeah, there you go.
Come to Bank of Mike.
Bank of Mike is going to open
soon. Bank of Mike will file all your UCC-1 financing statements.
Yeah. It won't get you anywhere, but he'll file them.
When that guy came in my office and kind of gave me a wink and a nod saying he wanted to do that, I should have said, sure, no problem. All I need is $10,000.
There you go. When Mr. Green makes his appearance.
That's right. Instead, I said, sorry, pal. I can't help you.
Number four is financial fraud schemes. Sovereign citizens commit many types of fraud, mail, bank, insurance, mortgage, and wire fraud, and try to justify their actions through their beliefs. A few months ago, a man was convicted of attempting to make the government of Denver pay his personal debts.
Seems so reasonable.
He believed they should. And then number five is intimidation and obstruction of law enforcement. Now, of course, obstruction is ones that don't show their ID when asked on traffic stops or filing liens against judges and things like that on their property and stuff like that. So that's the things they do. And, you know, when I break this down, a lot of them, they call themselves free people of the land and things like that, that they are natural citizens of here. They didn't gain their citizenship through the 14th Amendment. They say that that's people that are under the federal government if you gained your citizenship under the 14th Amendment. So they're not. Now, the only ones that I think could call themselves this and have some type of claim would be Native Americans.
Right.
I mean, to me, they've got some kind of claim of being, they were here, and they, you know, who made them? You know, like, I remember the line from Josie Wales, you know, that I never surrendered to the pale faces. They captured my horse and made my horse surrender, but I didn't.
That's right.
I kind of think of the same thing. You know, I never surrendered. I've been here ever all along. I don't recognize your government. I think they've got a legitimate argument.
Well, and that might become the basis for reservations and things like that. Because if you think if you had some sort of property ownership rights in some land that date back to before the country existed,
sure,
then why should you pay taxes on it?
Yeah.
So,
but the bottom line is that
you don't get the benefit of all the infrastructure if you don't.
Well,
pay
that's
taxes
true. On, yeah. So. Then that's the thing. How can you say I get all the rights of being a U.S. citizen, but I don't have to follow the laws?
Yeah.
I mean, that just doesn't make sense. You can't have it both ways. It's one or the other.
No, and that's why, like, you know, I mean, paying taxes, everybody jokes like, oh, yeah, pay taxes, it sucks, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, taxes do a lot of good for the country. They have our roadways, our infrastructure, and whatnot. I mean, it's an important part of being an American.
Even schools.
That's right. Even schools.
But when you hear the guy saying, hey, you're violating my First Amendment right. I have freedom of speech. Oh, I'm not a citizen of the U.S. Well, wait a minute. Yeah. How can you quote the First Amendment and you're not a citizen of the U.S. government?
You know? Oh, since you don't believe in the U.S. government, no need for me to read the Miranda rights then.
No, I'll just shoot you right here. But here's as many lawsuits and everything else and as many crimes as they commit and everything, and they file under sovereign citizenship. They said, like, court cases in 2014, there were over 1,200. Not a single one was ruled in their favor. And as a matter of fact, I only came across, has a sovereign citizen ever won their case by being a sovereign citizen? And I found one.
Oh, really?
And they actually won it by accident.
How so?
And this was in Canada. This happened in a Canadian court. And the person was pulled over, and he was asked to show his driver's license and ID. It was because he didn't signal when he made a turn. Mm-hmm. He was asked to show his driver's license and proof of insurance or whatever it was, registration, something like that. And he wouldn't cooperate. He wouldn't show it, so he didn't have to. And so then they tried to arrest him. He resisted, so they charged him with battery on an officer or whatever like that, resisting arrest and all this kind of stuff. So it goes court. Well, he represented himself, as a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he said was, they had no right to stop me. They had no right to, you know, arrest me. I committed no crime. And so then he proceeded with all his sovereign citizen, here's why I'm a sovereign citizen, all this other kind of stuff. Well, what it came down to in the end is the judge said, I don't care about any of that. I don't believe any of that sovereign citizen business. But here's where you are right. They didn't have the right to stop you because he was going by their traffic code, how it reads. And it said that in signaling, you signal if it will interact with some other vehicles, like, you know, somebody's coming at you or somebody's behind you and you need to signal so they know what your intention is. If there's nobody else around and you don't signal, it's not a crime according to their according to their law code. So in essence, at the start of his argument, when he said they didn't have the right to pull me over, he was correct.
Yeah.
But not for the reason that he thought. So he let him out of it and he got him off. And he said, if they, now I don't think it's like this in the U.S. You correct me if I'm wrong, but they took away the obstruction or the battery on the police officer and everything, because they said if the police officer had never initiated the stop, then he never would have resisted arrest.
Yeah. I mean, that there's definitely an argument to be made for that. It's the whole fruit of the poisonous tree type argument.
Well, I didn't think that was the case. If even if you got pulled over and you weren't supposed to, if you resist arrest, you still would stand for those charges, even if they didn't get you, even if they didn't give you a ticket for the initial traffic charge, I thought.
No, I mean, anything that stems, like, and if there was any evidence, like if they stopped you illegally and then found drugs in your car, things like that, then they wouldn't have the right to use it.
So you could beat the crap out of the cop and walk away, huh?
Well, I don't, I mean.
You're not recommending that, are you, counselor?
I don't think so. I mean, I guarantee there's probably case law in point that says that that's kind of a specific and distinct crime, different from the fruit of the poisonous tree thing. So
yeah,
but a lot of times these obstruction cases, I mean, they're nothing more than, I mean, I hate to say it, but they're just kind of tacked on there. I mean, it's, you know, he was resisting while we were putting his handcuffs on, you know, nobody really got hurt. It's just, he wasn't cooperating. So what's the real damage? So,
right.
Then they throw him on a lot of times just to add extra leverage to get somebody. Cause I mean, they were probably being kind of an ass and
yeah, I don't know why they singled him out for that. If he looked suspicious, if they knew of his previous activities or something like that.
Now, but there's a legal theory that goes with what you kind of just mentioned. I think I may have mentioned it before. Called the tipsy coachman.
It seems like I've heard that.
So basically, the tipsy coachman doctrine is essentially that you get to the end point, maybe you didn't take the most direct route or the right way, but your final argument is right. So tipsy coachman means you have a drunk cab driver. He drives you all over town, but he got you where you're going, so it's okay. And that's actually a legal theory too. Is like if you cite the wrong law, but you come to the right conclusion, then the court can apply the tipsy coachman doctrine and say, well, you still win. So.
Well, anyway, that was the only case that these guys have ever heard. So if any of you are thinking of using this as getting out of paying taxes or anything else, I wouldn't advise it because the batting record is very low on that ability to succeed with this with this law.
Yeah, it's like bringing a football helmet to a baseball game.
Bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Well, at least they're both weapons. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal briefs.
Legal briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms that we talked about during the show.
Yes, we do. We talk about them during the show, or anyway, you do.
Yeah. Anyway, it's where I ask Tommy about different terms we discussed.
You were probably thrown off by the new environment.
I am. I don't know what's going on here. There's bright lights. What's going on here? I don't recognize this. I do not recognize this. The studio.
This is our sovereign citizen studio.
This is an admiralty studio. It's not.
I have lace on the flag on the wall.
There is some lace, I think.
It's pink.
That might be insulation.
That's Mary's. It's from her dance studio.
Well, the first term is UCC-1 financing statement.
Well, that's a uniform commercial code. And as a financing statement would be have to do with who has a lien against your money that you borrowed.
And why does that apply to sovereign citizens?
Well, because they think that they have the right to file for this money because being held in some kind of a bank somewhere and all they got to do is file the right paperwork and the government owes it to them.
That's right. Now, what are two? We talked about a couple of them, but see if you can name at least two theories as to why the American government has these corporate shells or corporate accounts set up for these people and where this whole kind of theory derives from.
It all derives from the idea that the U.S. citizens are the collateral that back up the money that the U.S. government uses.
That's one, yeah. But where does that originate from?
That originates from the Admiralty laws.
Well, it does, but also it's from when the gold standard was replaced. Was
replaced, okay.
So that's their whole theory, is that that's one of the things. The other would be the Civil War. And then there's one, as Judge Posner stated, would be the Queen Stamp Act, which was actually before the U.S. was a country and not by a queen and not really about stamps.
No, it means when you buy your alcohol, that's all the taxes you have to pay, huh?
That's right. All right, so let's see if you can name how many different sovereign citizen terms or things that they'll say a lot that you can name within 15 seconds.
Oh, man.
Go.
Traveler. a traveler. UCC. Silver. Silver certificate. free man. Mechanics lien. I don't know. I forget. But they got to be in capitals.
We would have also accepted letters of marque. Fringe, affidavit of truth, notice of silver surety bond.
That's the one I was searching for.
I know. The whole traveler one, that's kind of a bit of an inside joke.
Because you got to have a traveler whenever you walk in the streets of Savannah.
That's right. I don't know if anybody knows this, but in Savannah, the public drinking laws are non-existent. So you can actually take drinks from bar to bar or walk down the street with a drink.
They encourage it.
That's right.
They have walk-up windows on the sidewalk. You can walk up and buy a drink to continue walking down the street. You don't even have to go in.
And so Tommy calls that a traveler.
And you have to say it that way. It ends with an A-H.
That's right.
Traveler.
When walking in Savannah, you must have a traveler.
Now, Mike, I got one other thing I had to go over just for the sake of, we're talking about shell games and fraud and everything else. And I couldn't let this go. Joshua Habel shared the link for us. I hope it's Habel, somewhere around there, H-A-B-E-L. You know, the thing came out recently with Intel and their chips and how their security problem is affecting all our phones and computers and everything else. Well, I understand people make mistakes. Maybe this was new technology that found this vulnerability and all this kind of stuff. What I take exception to is the fact that their CEO, Brian Krzanich, sold off $24 million worth of stock back before this was public knowledge. Now, I don't know about you, but I've heard of a thing called insider trading. And insider trading says that if you work in the business or work in stock and you have information that the general public doesn't have, you can't act on it and financially gain off of it. And this guy sold off his stock. Now, the stock sale came after Google had informed Intel of a significant vulnerability in the chips and the flaw that became public only this past week. Intel says the stock was unrelated to the vulnerability, the stock sale, then that it came as part of a planned divestiture program. But that divestiture program was put in place 2 months after he found out about this. So, yeah, they didn't sell it till the next month, but it was... He found out, put the plan in place, a month later sold it, and then a couple months later after that, then the general public found out.
Sounds fishy to me.
I mean, these guys think they can get away, and one of the things that alerted them to it is the stock sale left him with only the minimum number of shares that he had to have to maintain his position as a CEO. So, see, you have to own so many shares. He sold off everything over it. Now, you tell me it wasn't because he knew about that. That is just an out-and-out crime. And if the Security Exchange Commission doesn't get on him about that and he doesn't go to jail, there is something really wrong.
Yeah. Well, who knows if he will, because a lot of times the Securities and Exchange Commission is stocked by the same people that do this kind of stuff. It's all kind of the whole, I hate to use the term drain the swamp type thing, but it's swamp.
Well, that's who the sovereign citizens need to go after, is people like that. Those are the people that...
I don't think we need to tell people they need to go after people. Let's clear that up a little bit.
Well, I mean, file liens on them. That's what I mean. Nothing violent.
Don't file
liens on
them.
Do the paperwork stuff.
No.
I'm not advocating violence in any manner.
I'm not advocating any illegal act or any kind of fraudulent filing on their house. Don't do that.
Well, these are the people, though, that are giving us people that aren't sovereign citizens bad names.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Well, it's not right, and I'm mad as hell.
What is that from? That's WKRP or something?
No, that's from...
I know, I've seen it before.
Network.
Oh, from the Network?
Yeah, Network. It was an older movie from about the 70s or 80s. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
Well, I think that's going to do it for our episode on sovereign citizens. Hope you enjoyed it and learned some things, learned some different tips and tricks about how to make money without actually doing anything and how to get out of all these onerous laws that you don't want to follow because, hey, they shouldn't apply to you.
Yeah, but don't do any of that stuff.
No, don't do any of that stuff. And we'll be coming to you from Smurl Studios from now on, I think.
From the top of Three Last Mountain.
That's right. It's our new space.
The final frontier.
I hope not the final frontier. I don't be buried here. There is a casket over there. I don't know why.
You'll find out soon.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.